I'm Laura Palmer, host of Island Crime. Season 6, Sweethearts, is the story of three teenage girls who were all murdered in Victoria, Canada, within about 12 months.
So she was scared. Something out there scared her.
You just created the playground where predators can really thrive.
She was a 16-year-old girl. She was a sweetheart.
Listen to Sweethearts at frequencypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get podcasts.
Find your frequency.
The Big Story is brought to you by Scotia iTrade. There's a trader in all of us. In 2018, video technology allowed filmmaker Jordan Peele, who has a great Obama impersonation, to make the former president appear to say anything, including this.
President Trump is a total and complete dipshit.
In 2019, that technology will evolve and improve until all you need is some video of someone talking and a computer program, and you'll be able to make anyone say anything on video. It's a terrifying thought given our current fragile hold on truth in our media, especially online. So what happens when this tech gets into the hands of people who want to fracture that relationship, to discredit the media, to make it impossible to believe anything you see or hear? How do we begin to deal with that? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big
Story. Actually, I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story. Welcome to 2019, the year of the deepfake. Stephen Marr is a contributing editor at Maclean's, and he dug into just how ugly this technology could get. Tell me about that clip I might have seen featuring former President Barack Obama calling Donald Trump a complete and total dipshit.
Yeah, well, it was done by American filmmaker Jordan Peele as an example to show what grim new future we're headed into. In the video, a man who looks very much like Barack Obama calls
President Trump is a total and complete dipshit.
But you really could not tell from watching the video that it's fake.
You see, I would never say these things, at least not in a public address, but someone else would. Someone like Jordan Peele.
And this is the disturbing new world that we're living in now. And it's important that people realize that you can no longer believe your eyes.
This is a dangerous time. Moving forward, we need to be more vigilant with what we trust from the internet. That's a time when we need to rely on trusted news sources.
How does that happen? How does Jordan Peele do that?
Peele used a couple inexpensive off-the-shelf programs that use artificial intelligence to edit video. But it's only really possible for him to do that because he has a good Obama impersonation.
Right.
This year, Adobe is coming out with a program that will allow anyone to type in some text and then have someone else say it in their voice. So Peele was able to do basically Hollywood special effects type tricks here. But before the year is out, this technology isn't going to be in the hands of every internet troll sitting in their basement. And I have zero doubt that these people are going to start using it for mischief.
What happens when that program becomes widely available? Obviously, people will use it to do all sorts of weird things. What will change online, and especially in politics as we head into a federal election?
Well, it's worrying. I spoke with Regina Reaney, an assistant philosophy professor at York University, who's been thinking about this and considering the likely implications. I mean, already as an election reporter, for years, you kind of watch for these things. People will say the what we call oppo people,
right,
working for the political parties, will go through social media feeds and old stories to try to find embarrassing clips or images of candidates for public office. It's become a sort of routine part of an election campaign and a test for leaders in a way. Do they make the right call on who to fire and who to keep? And it's a sort of routine part of campaigns. That's going to be increasingly weird because there's going to have to be an authentication process now. And Professor Reaney pointed out that it will change things in a disturbing way, partly because people will now be able to say falsely that video has been faked.
Right. It works both ways.
Yeah, that's right. And if they telling the truth or lying makes a difference between them gaining a public office, they'll have strong motivation to bend the truth. Rini refers to it as video and audio recordings as an epistemic backstop that we've become accustomed to using since the era of audio and video recording began. And that backstop is now going to disappear.
The first thing I thought about when reading your piece and we were going to talk is October 2016 and that Access Hollywood tape of Donald Trump comes out, the one where he's getting off the bus and you
right.
know.
You know, I'm automatically attracted to beautiful. I just start kissing them. It's like a magnet. You just kiss. I don't even wait. And when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything.
And immediately, I mean, he would just say, oh, they doctored that, right? He even hinted at it back then that it might be doctored. But now that this technology is going to be available, how impossible will it be to hang anything on anyone?
I know. It's going to put I hope that what it's going to do is put a kind of greater focus on professional journalists who have ways of authenticating documents and video, audio clips. I mean, documents, we know for a long time that documents can be faked. And as an investigative journalist, I've come across it once or twice in my career where someone has forged a document. So, I mean, that actually suggests that it won't be totally disastrous because we are already suspicious of documents. But now we're going to have to be as suspicious of video and audio as we were of documents in the past.
Up next.
If you have 20 minutes of video of somebody, you can do a fake video and then gaslight them. You know, lots of people have 20 minutes of video of themselves up on YouTube or someplace. And so all kinds of odd things could happen in people's personal lives around this, too.
There's a trader in all of us. Direct invest with Scotia iTrade. Become a new client and you could get up to $1,500 cash or 300 free trades when you open and fund a new account. Conditions apply. See ScotiaiTrade.com for details. Did you get a sense how difficult these videos will be to be debunked when they start appearing?
Well, we're going to get into questions of provenance now, I think. So that, as with a document, it won't be enough to say, well, here's a video and it's proof in itself that the person in the video said whatever he seems to be saying. We're going to have to say, well, here's a video, and it was produced by person X on this date, and we know that that person produced it because we've spoken to them. So it's going to require us to do the kind of homework that we haven't had to do until now.
There's the internet phrase, pics, or it didn't happen.
which speaks to
how reliable video and photographic evidence has traditionally been taken. And now we don't take photographic evidence that lightly. I mean, you can point to any number of magazine covers that have later been called out for photoshopping. But video, I feel like, still holds a place because it looks so real, especially because we have so much amateur video being shot now and cell phone cameras are everywhere. So it is conceivable that anything could have been captured by a camera somewhere.
Yeah, it's true. And now we're going to have to look at all that video with much more suspicion. And so the culture will have to change. I'm sure it will, but people are going to have to adjust their thinking. This is all taking place in a greater context of the erosion of traditional media organizations that maintained authentication standards. So,
right.
I mean, we're already living in a world where increasing numbers of people are getting their news from outlets that don't maintain the same standards that traditional media have. In the recent case, for example, Jim Acosta was in a conflict in the White House and refused to relinquish a microphone while he was asking a question.
That's enough.
Mr. President,
I
was going to ask one of the other folks.
That's
had,
enough.
Pardon me, ma'am. Mr. President.
That's enough.
InfoWars then released a doctored video of the confrontation, which seemed to show Acosta being rough with a young female intern. And that was then spread by Sarah Sanders in the White House. So, you know, you can't trust InfoWars. They're proven liars. And there are many other outlets that are like that. So we have to hope that people will react to this by subjecting their media providers to greater scrutiny. But, you know, it's kind of an open question whether that will happen.
Right. And there's already a movement against the same media outlets that would normally be held up as those authenticators, right? So the Trump White House releases a doctored video. This is a hypothetical situation, but the Trump White House releases a doctored video. The New York Times says that video has been doctored. Trump says the New York Times is fake news. And now everybody's just calling everybody else liars and nobody knows what's true. That's terrifying to me.
It is. It is terrifying. And it has been making me think about Hannah Arendt, who was a philosopher and journalist who did important work about mid-century totalitarianism. And she observed that totalitarian governments in Europe in the mid-century were able to cast doubt on objective truth, taking a kind of power in that. And I think this is something similar that you see with what Trump is doing. When he says, well, this is fake news, and his followers agree, the objective truth of the situation, they seem to be experiencing a kind of freedom and power in rejecting the objective truth in favor of their shared separate reality. And in a sense, I think it's a real kind of threat if larger and larger numbers of people are accepting a reality that are accepting an alternate reality, that poses a kind of challenge to political cohesion for a society. If large numbers of people are basically checking out of a shared sense of evidentiary standards, if you know what I mean, if they will believe what they want to believe instead of what can be proven to be so.
It's funny because my next question plays right into that, because just to play devil's advocate for 1 second, I mean, doesn't that mean that this doctored video would matter less, since basically 85% of America is already going to believe whatever their tribe believes anyway? Like, it's certainly not like we haven't seen Trump supporters deny obvious things that he's said, or vice versa with people who want to vilify him. So, like, it seems like we're already living in two alternate realities. So maybe this is just the natural extension of it.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it's one of those things that we'll see as it plays out. I forget now which Trumpian flunky said, I think it might have been Bannon, said that part of their strategy was to flood the media with bullshit.
Yeah, just the doubt is winning for them.
Yes, exactly. And because people respond to an emotional truth with Donald Trump, his supporters don't actually care if the facts that he's discussing are facts or not, because they're responding in an emotional way to his message, because they've identified with him. So, you know, do individual disputes over facts really matter if his supporters have identified strongly enough with him? Maybe not. Maybe that's not the most important thing, and maybe it's a mistake to get too distracted. I think the fact-checking effort of Daniel Dale, for instance, is salutary and valuable and necessary, unfortunately, but it has its limits. At some point, dealing with Trump, it's necessary, I think, to forget the facts and think about the emotional facts that his followers are responding to.
Do you think that we're going to face the exact same thing in Canada in this federal election? Because I know we'd like to think that we're a little bit above the total rejection of facts that seems to happen to the South. But, I mean, we might have thought that before what happened in Ontario last year.
Yeah, I don't know. A lot of people criticize Conservative leader Andrew Scheer for playing fast and loose with the facts. And they point to, you know, his comments, for instance, about the UN Immigration Pact, and when he seems to be suggesting that it will bind Canada to some UN scheme that would open our borders. And I think that's fair game to criticize him or to observe that. And I think it's also fair to point out that Hamish Marshall, his campaign director,
yeah,
used to work for Rebel Media, which, you know, is like InfoWars. It's its business model hinges on spreading falsehood, I think. That might be going too far, but it certainly does not follow the kind of traditional.
Nobody would hold them up as an authenticator, for sure.
No. So, you know, might the conservatives be tempted to go farther. I think we should worry about that if we see it in a way. Because they also don't want to seem to be ridiculous. And the path to electoral success likely does not run that way. Not for Andrew Scheer. I don't think he's a Trumpian character. I don't think he's by nature a rabble-rousing populist. So it's something to watch, but I don't see that really. I think the more likely thing is each federal election is in fact 338 elections, all these different riding associations.
Right.
And I suspect that the deepfake thing will more likely seeing it bubbling up from people who may not be part of central campaigns and from outside media forces. You know, there's increasingly these sort of silos of information running through social media, mostly Facebook, where you have groups funded by industrial concerns or labor that are absolutely not beyond distorting reality in order to try to get their candidates in office. Nobody has any reason to trust those people. We don't know who they are, right? They're just putting their money out.
When you talked to experts for this piece, how worried were they in general about the direction this is going and what it's going to lead to in 2019 and beyond?
Oh, they're concerned. In particular, Professor Reedy, who has been thinking about this hard and writing on it, and she's concerned not just about the political implications, but about the implications for people's private lives. If you have 20 minutes of video of somebody, you can do a fake video and then gaslight them. That's the kind of scenario that she's imagining. You know, lots of people have 20 minutes of video of themselves up on YouTube or someplace. And so all kinds of odd things could happen in people's personal lives around this, too.
Do they think that, or do you think that, and this is maybe a little more philosophical, that Adobe or companies like that have a responsibility with this kind of technology that has such far-reaching impacts?
I haven't heard anyone say that. And in a sense, I don't know how you could ask Adobe or any other companies to keep these kinds of techniques from the public.
Yeah, I don't think you could.
No, because somebody else will do it. It's a bit like the kind of ethical questions that are raised over 3D printing, I guess. If you make a 3D printing machine that can produce a gun or a bomb, how responsible is the company that designed the 3D printer?
Yeah. There's no good way out of it. I mean, it's the same as the question in the United States is whether victims of mass shootings should be able to sue firearms manufacturers, right? Technology falls into the wrong hands every single time.
Yeah, I think that's right. But these are questions for legislators are going to have to deal with this kind of thing. I mean, we've already seen legislation to deal with revenge porn. I suspect that it may be necessary to make it illegal to produce fake video of someone.
Well, that'll be a fun question to wrestle with in 2019. Thanks, Stephen.
Thank you.
Stephen Marr, contributing editor at Maclean's. That was The Big Story, brought to you by Scotia iTrade. You can visit scotiaitrade.com to start direct investing today. And you can visit thebigstorypodcast.ca for all of our other episodes, all the ones made in 2018, and this one, our first of the new year. We're so happy to be back. You can find us on social media at Big Story Podcast on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. It's a new year. We are looking for new story ideas. Tell us what stories matter to you. And of course, rate us and review us and download and listen. I guess wherever you get your podcasts on Apple, Google, Stitcher, or Spotify, or any one of a number of others. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. Thanks for listening. We will talk tomorrow.